Hello and welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a weekly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined as ever by Carlton Gibson. Hello, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we are recording this Tuesday, March 17th, amidst the coronavirus pandemic. So we thought we'd talk about remote work, which is an episode we had planned for a long time anyways, and is perhaps a bit more timely. But first, a little bit of news. I'll start with some Django news. So the Django Software Foundation board approved a new governance model for Django. There'll be a link in the notes that removes the older core. There's now a technical board and a DSF. And the gist of it is it makes it easier for new contributors, more accurately reflects current contributors. And so this is a win overall, most people feel, for Django itself. So that's something we talked about in the meeting last week for the Software Foundation. Anything you want to add, Carlton, or how that impacts the work of the fellows?
It doesn't really impact the work of the fellows. I think it more recognizes in the structure of the Django Software Foundation and the Django project how it's been run for quite a few years since the fellow project began. So, you know, since that began, first it was Tim Graham, he was there doing it, and he was the merger. He was doing all the merging, all the PR review, not all the PR review, but, you know, putting it into the thing itself. And there were this Django core, which had commit rights from back in the day, but no one was using any of that. So with the change in the governance model, that kind of recognizes the structure as it is. And it you know, the hope is that it gives us a nice foundation for the next, you know, period in Django's life.
Yeah. And a shout out to James Bennett, who has been leading this for several years and doing a lot of the work to make this happen. So thank you, James. What else? In personal news, my wife and I had our third baby 16 days ago. So that's wonderful. I'm pretty sleep deprived on top of everything else. So this might be meandering, but certainly gives me extra perspective about, you know, thinking about the world, holding a little kid for 12 hours a day, and ways in which, you know, tech can help people generally, and specifically with this health stuff. Because I don't know about you, Carlton, certainly I have sometimes a feeling of, you know, I know people who are front lines, you know, the hospitals and everything else. And, you know, I have to remind myself tech is a part of that, right? We're all commuting remotely, and there's going to be more and more ways in which technology and you know, Django can and will be used to help. So
it's like I'm thinking about the doctor on demand type model, yep. You know, where they've got the remote app and you talk to a doctor online. That kind of thing is perfect for the current outbreak. I don't know if they've got enough capacity, but, you know, it's the way it should be going, right?
Right. And also for education. I mean, so all the schools are closed here in the States, I assume, in Spain.
So, yeah, no, tell me.
You know, lots of things. And then and I think I'm also, you know, all these things bring out the best and the worst in people, but there are so many helpers out there. You know, a small example is the schools are closed in the United States. Child nutrition is linked to the schools. There are people in my hometown and many towns who are working extra time shifts, who are making meals, sending them to families in need. So even though the headlines are pretty bad, there are all these micro examples of people doing amazing stuff. So that's about all I'll say on that. And if you want to add anything, Carlton.
No, it's kind of total lockdown. You're allowed to go to the supermarket, but they're the only shops that are open. So it's really, you know, and if you're out, and the police will be like, well, why are you out? And if you haven't got a good reason, you can be fined and, you know.
Yeah, that's not here yet. Probably by the time this airs, it will be. So let's talk about working from home remotely. And I think part of that is I had realized that, you know, both you and I, Carlton, we not only work from home for many years, but also are basically self-employed. So we'll try to separate those two. So to me, the kind of areas I think about, and I can think back to when I first started working remotely, the biggest one is discipline. And part of that is, as we both, well, I don't now, but as you do, having a dedicated space and time to do your work, or just that acclimation of the first 2 weeks. It's really interesting to me how even people who in an office environment are really go-getters can really struggle with the discipline of not turning on Netflix, getting a snack. It's really, you kind of have to get through that, and you have to, you know.
The work environment is like a procrastinate this a procrastination display, right? You go to the office and you sit at your desk and, you know, there's other people and there's a kind of a expectation
there's a structure
of work.
For you,
and,
yeah.
You know, if you go and spend too much time hanging out at the water cooler, you get a bad name. But then you're at home, right? And then you're on your laptop and then you, you know, Twitter's open all of a sudden or, you know, and, oh, I'll just go make a, put the coffee pot on. And, you know, all of a sudden the entire day kind of disappeared and you've done 25 minutes work, and but you're exhausted because you've spent the entire day procrastinating, and that's mentally draining.
Right. And I think, you know, in a way, you know, you and I both have hordes of children, and their schedules forces a discipline that, you know, if not for that, it would be harder in a way.
But we've got to divide this in two things. Like, there's working from home when you're like not got kids with you, and then there's working from home when there's kids. So let's talk about working home when you're by yourself, because for me the trick is you've got to find out when you're productive. You've got to find the bit of the day. So human body, it can get, you know, 3-4 hours work done maximum, needs a break, and then another 2-3 hours work, you know, possibly as well. But that second period isn't going to be as high productive as the first bit. So you've got to find the part in the day where you've got that 3 hours, 3-4 hours that's yours, and then you've got to work it.
Yeah, and it's so true that when you work from home, you really realize all the time that's wasted with the rest of the nonsense. You know, the commute, the water cooler. And so,
well, let's say you've got an hour commute each way, right? That's 2 hours a day. That's like half of the gold time.
Well, right. So I was going to say that on the one hand, you realize how productive you can be when you remove all these distractions. It's amazing how much you can get done in an hour or two. But to what you were saying, it's also true that I was certainly guilty of this. Of I was just like, I need to work all the time, and I quickly realized, you know, I do hit, you know, I have these mental, physical, mainly mental limits of I can't code for more than 3 hours at a time. I do need to have these blocks. And certainly now, what am I, 7-8 years into my, you know, more or less remote journey, the way I structure my day is I'm a morning person.
Yeah, me
kids
too.
Go to school. So I try to do technical deep thinking coding in the morning, and then in the afternoon do email and all the rest of it. I'm not always successful at that. You know, if I start in on, you know, an email or something and the morning is kind of blown up. But that is my ideal day, is doing that 3-4 hour block. And of course, you know, and also, you know, your brain is always working, or certainly ours are. So even if I'm playing with my kids or something else, you know, I'm still thinking of the problem, you know, in the same way, if you sleep on it, if you do time box things and you do say, I'm going to try to be present for dinner and this and that, you know, or pick up, you know, thoughts will come to you, right? You can't kind of force that. So certainly, I you know, I had to learn the hard way that, you know, I felt like I had to sit at a desk for, you know, 8-9 hours a day or more, actually. And I just, that wasn't getting the best out of me.
No, you've got to be realistic. You know, you work for 50 minutes, take a 10-minute break. And that 10-minute break can be like putting the washing on, right? So you can get the house jobs done as well.
Right.
But while you're, that putting the washing on, well, let's say putting the washing on, right? That occupies your sort of left brain, the bit that needs something concrete to do. So that's distracted. And then your creative right brain side is going, hey, you know that problem you've been struggling with? Here's the answer for free. And it's like, you win. I was hanging out the washing, and I sort of solved this really hard algorithm that I've been...
But know. There is that balance, right? There's like taking 15 minutes, and then there's taking an hour to, you know, make an elaborate lunch or something.
Yeah,
so there's a balance. That's where the discipline, where I think it's really requires so much more discipline. But you know, once you get used to it, you get these wins of you know, it's kind of, you and I know, like, I know what I need to do to get a great day's work done. And I also know that I can get more done, you know, in a day remotely than I could, you know, in a week in an office setting where all this time would be burned.
I've been remote so long that you put me in an office. It's like, I'm all right for the day. I'll come and visit the office for the day, but no way am I there, say, all week. That would just be...
Yeah. Well, you prioritize your time too. I mean, even, you know, partly in an office setting, you have to be available for things, but you just become much more stringent of even, you know, normally I live in a city, and if people want to get coffee or something, like, that's half the day. And if it's the morning, like, that's my whole day. So I'm much more, can and do say no a lot more than I would in a, you know, office environment where there's open spaces and people tapping you all the time. And it's just so hard to get into any kind of flow.
Yeah. And I, part of that is I don't have things like Slack or WhatsApp or, you know, Facebook or Twitter available during the day, because if you they're there, then, you know, a direct message can come in and it's like, oh, a massive distraction. So those things are off. And, you know,
yeah.
You know, I use Twitter. That's the only thing I'm on, but I'll check that periodically and it's like a quick response and then back to work.
Yeah. And it is, social media is exhausting. I typically only use Twitter and pretty, you know, once or twice a day, but you know, recently with an infant in my arms, I kind of have, you know, him in one hand and my phone in the other, getting updates on the state of the world. And it's exhausting, you know, just looking at in it, you know, and for what, right? So,
but it's got that addictive thing to it as well, you know, where it's like, oh, you find yourself checking your phone again, again, again. No, that's the time when the phone has to be moved and put away and, you know, not touched.
Yeah. So, another piece of this, and maybe this veers more into if you're doing your own thing, is around creativity, or perhaps I just want to get this in there, which is John Cleese of Monty Python fame has these incredible talks on creativity in business and how to have open and closed minds. We'll put a link to one of his talks because maybe, I guess in all, you know, whether you're self-employed or not, I often struggle with those transitions. I mean, it helps me if I say, as I did, you know, the morning is code, and then the afternoon is sort of contemplation. When I try to think about what to do and how to do it, I often muddle about and it doesn't feel good. So at the same time, I have a planner and I think you do as well. And I'm very specific on what my goals are. I usually have three big ones. And I try to do that thinking the night before, and I do weekly and daily so that when I come in the morning, instead of blowing an hour getting my brain revved up, it's like, right, boom, boom, boom. I've already decided what to do. And that's employer thing.
I call that the downhill start, right? So that when you get in the morning, you've got this set of, like, it can be a major task and a few bullet points just on how it's done. So you get to the desk in the morning, you look at the planner. I have a sort of weekly diary with some notes on the side. I look at the notes and I'm like, okay, yeah, get on with that. And then that first 30 minutes, that first hour is just super. And then you're in the zone. And the great danger of being at home is that you just can't find, I can't get in the zone, I can't get in the zone. That's because you're on Twitter. Get off Twitter and do some work. So, like, you'll suddenly find you're in the zone. It's that those first 3 minutes, those first 5 minutes.
Right. It's all, I read a study that backed this up, but I don't know if it's placebo or not, but I often tell myself that the first 10 minutes, it's never going to feel easy. Even if I've had, you know, a perfect night's sleep and everything is great, I show up, there's still a part of me that's like...
What's one of those, Will?
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, but so in the same way that, I don't know, I like to run, you know, the first couple minutes of running is often a little bit uncomfortable, but then it feels nice. And I just know that if I just put in that 10, 15 minutes, just go like, right, I'm going to attack the hard problem first. I know I'll get into that state. And I don't sit around thinking like, oh, where's my muse, or, you know, or writer's block, right? I mean, slight tangent, but I used to be a book editor. So, you know, with writer's block, I always love the idea of like, you just don't allow it to be an option. You're like, I just can't have writer's block, right? Paper has to get done. Code has to be done.
Well, like with coding, if it's a Django project, you know, you can get started. You can, I don't know what code to write today. Okay, open up your terminal, activate your virtual environment, run your test suite. Right, look at some logging errors that pop up. Like, dig into it, and you're there. All of a sudden, you're there, and all you did was actually begin.
Right, and well, and part of that too is sometimes I'll read two articles about Django, or there's the Google groups, there's the Django newsletter that I have now. So it's a little bit of a cop out, but it's still kind of Django related, where I'm, you know, slowly rolling into a downhill.
Okay.
That's better for afternoon, evening time.
Exactly. I do that kind of thing in the evening, because say I sat down to a nice juicy article in the morning, that's it. Oh, I'll just write, oh, and then I'll have to do some notes on it. And oh, look, that time's disappeared. So I'd save that for the afternoon or the evening.
Yeah. And if you know, it's a function of getting older and kids and this and that. But like, if you actually count up the amount of thinking time that you have in a year in your life, it's so small. Like, I'm kind of like, how do humans do anything when you think about all the nonsense we spend our time with, right? Like, and one analogy is there's this famous skier, Michaela Schifrin, who used to live near where I do, and she calculated, she spends her entire year trying to ski. She spends less than 24 hours on the snow. And in a way, if you think about how much time you actually spend thinking about coding or like these problems, it's so small, right? But it's because it requires all this other stuff, you know, work, right? Like, athletes talk about how they, you know, even with like resting is part of the work, right? So like being rested, having these focus zones, even though it's only 4 hours. You can only get that 4 hours by the other 20 you're trying to spend the right way.
Yeah, self-care is part of the work. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at.
No, even entirely.
So another piece, is a big one, is socialization for working remotely. So I, you know, even the most introverted programmer still finds that they need some human interaction. And you know, when you strip out the commute, when you strip out the daily this and that, if you know, you lose that, right? So you lose that both, and it manifests itself in a number of ways I've found. So one would be if you have a partner, right? You're suddenly you're home with them all day. And you don't have anything to talk about because you don't have the like, oh, you know, someone did something at the bus stop or this and that. It can be a strain on the relationship. And it can also, at least for me, I was guilty of finding myself wanting my wife to fill that void of like chattiness and other things that I have that was just sort of presented to me when I had a workplace and I was out in the world. And so I had to make steps. I'd A, recognize that, and B, be a little more specific about and deliberate about my steps. So trying to go to meetups, trying to schedule online calls with people, making more of an effort to, you know, do social things. Right? I mean, this is, I think, especially, you know, men as they get older, they aren't always great at maintaining kind of friendships and stuff. This is a tangent, but whatever. John Mulaney is a comedian who hosted SNL recently, and he had a little bit about the most amazing thing about Jesus is he had 12 adult friends who weren't friends of his wife, you know, his wife's husband. Because, you know, like all my friends are my like my wife's friends' husbands.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. And I think and I think there is a little honeymoon period for, especially for introverted people who, you know, it takes a little more work to be social, but even they find like you need to make that important. So don't think you can just be a hermit forever.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Maybe you can, Carlton, but I can't.
I get out. I go to Tai Chi, I meet people, I have a coffee, I make space in the week, but I agree entirely. You know, it's too easy to spend just the whole week. I was just in the house, I didn't go out, I didn't do anything. No,
right. You just have to be more deliberate about it. It's almost it's almost a discipline in a way of saying, like, this is important in a, you know, it's not just part of the daily flow of things, and it enriches your life.
You mentioned earlier on about the ideal day. And one exercise that I do periodically is I get like a planner of the week. So it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I block out areas where I'm like, well, now I'm working and this is lunchtime where I go pick up the kids. And this is the afternoon where I do this. And this is where my Tai Chi is. And this is where I might meet someone. And then you find where the gaps are. And then where those gaps are, you can say, oh, well, actually, I'd like to do this or I'd like to do that. And that's where you can fill in bits of your life that are missing. And you can do that periodically.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, I've also, again, with this idea of when you work remotely, you can really squeeze as much out of yourself is also for me, I can be a bit hard on myself. Just trying to be kinder when I have days where it's just not coming to me. Like I try to focus on the effort and the input rather than the result. So I can say, you know, some days I'll get so much done in an hour, and some days I'll do all the right things. I'll try for 3-4 hours. I'll get stuck on something, and I have to remind myself that the process is what's important, and not focus on the result. Which so there's that saying like don't let your successes get to your head, and don't let your failures get to your heart. That's true in a lot of realms, but especially with something very thoughtful like coding, where it does go in these kind of leaps, or it feels like these leaps, but when in fact it's all the process.
But if you're sat at the computer and you're getting nothing done, and you know, all of a sudden the procrastination tools come out and you're on Facebook and you're refreshing and doing all these, you know, I've checked the news 45 times in the last hour and nothing's changed, you know.
Why won't the New York Times update a little bit?
At that point, stop working. Just get off the computer, because as much as anything, it's probably a sign of burnout or tiredness. You know, burnout's a big, much more substantial thing than being tired that one day. But, you know, back away, take the space. You're at home. Just go and cook a risotto or something. Like, do something fulfilling, do something different. Go for a walk, spend some time with your spouse, go and see a friend, whatever it is. But get away from the view. Don't just sit there banging your head against the machine.
Yeah, that sometimes happens.
So you achieve nothing and you get more tired.
Yeah. And so really all this comes down to, you have to self-manage, you know, if you're working in a company, because they care about your whatever your deliverables are, and in a way they don't, you know, as long as you get them done. I mean, part of that is
Well, but even for Marx, right, the subsistence labor, the subsistence wage for a wage for a laborer was the included enough to get them there the next day to be able to do it again, right? You've got to be sustainable. You can't just burn yourself out on a given day or a given project. You've got to go the next day and the next day and the next day.
Right. Well, I was going to say that, you know, Google used to have this 20% time, and I certainly...
Did they cancel that? Because I thought that was fantastic.
I don't think they've had that for a long time.
Okay. Boo, new Google. Yay, old Google.
Pretty sure that that's been gone for a long time.
Okay.
But I was going to say, personally, I try to time box this where, and I've started doing this on Fridays where, you know, because creativity oftentimes comes out of sometimes procrastination or boredom. So I've started trying to have Fridays be days where I put the time in, but I let my brain go a little bit. So I have all these side projects I work on. Like I have starter projects and I have all these various things that are kind of interesting, but not, they're important, but not urgent, I would say. And so I found that rather than constantly feeling like I don't have time to like be creative or play, I have to just, you know, drill on, you know, my responsibilities. I do have an outlet for it. I say, okay, on Friday, I'm gonna take, you know, a couple hours and play around with this tutorial or, you know, keep learning these things that are easy to kind of forget doing when there's just so much of a, you know, a constant stream of things in my to-do list. Sometimes I just really need to say, like, well, I'm still gonna do stuff related to this, you know, in a way, like, I don't know, like a rock musician playing jazz or something, or like a theater actor, you know, movie actor doing theater. Like you need that, but it also needs, for me, it needs to be kind of time boxed. So it's not just like a procrastination itch that I scratch. Yeah,
exactly. That's time kind of key. Yeah. I allocate exactly this amount of time for it and perfect.
Yeah.
So we should talk about kids, right? Because it's all very well saying I'm going to do my 3-4 hours solid in the morning when you've got 3 or 4 children at home who are running around. And
I'm done with 3, Carlton. You're a madman.
Well, we had 2. We said, let's have a 3rd. Then we got twins. So, you know.
Yes, let's talk about kids. We can talk about whatever we want. What are your thoughts? How do kids...
I think the question, right, you got to look at how old they are, right? Because if they're babies, then, you know, there's a quite simple routine. They eat, they do
three things,
activity,
they do.
Yep. And they sleep, right? So the activity is probably changing their nappy or looking out the window or playing with a teddy, right? And they sleep. And they've got this routine. They do it all day and all night, and you've just got to fit in with it. So if you're going to work, the only time you can work is when they're asleep. So you can feed them, you can play with them, you can put them down, and then you can do maybe an hour's work before you've got to start thinking about, hey, they're going to wake up soon, they're going to want some food. You know, and you just got to be realistic with that. You can't expect to do, you know, 40 hours on a week. You're going to get done what you get done.
Right. And you're also, if they're little kids, you're going to be severely sleep deprived.
Yeah.
And you know, that's sort of the self-care piece. Yeah. I mean, I'm in the middle of that right now, right? I had, you know,
well, yours is brand new, so well,
nonsense. It? I'd plan to take a month a little bit easier, knowing that it's an intense period of time and, you know, rewarding time. But, you know, I need to just remove thoughts of all these projects or things. I'm like, oh, I want to do that. You know, I mean, and part of that is because coding is fun. It's fun to focus on a problem and kind of block out the rest of the world, especially when you've got little kids and you're just constantly reactive. You know, so building in some self-care there, is good as well.
Yeah.
But I will say, go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, my kids are spaced out a little bit, 7, 4, and 0, as my kids say. It's amazing. And I grew up with multiple siblings. We're all around the same age. Seeing a 7-year-old who can soothe and take care of the baby is amazing. I just didn't even think that was
That's like
happening.
Outsourcing. That's brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, even this morning, you know, she came down and helped and, yeah, so it's just a really beautiful thing. But we got to be realistic about, you know, if you're going to be a present parent, it's sleep, I think. You know, until you sleep regularly through the night, I mean, you know, I'm up 4 or 5 times a night, my wife even more. It's just unrealistic that I'm going to do any good work. I'm probably going to cause more harm
That's independent from working at home, you know, even if you were doing a commute going into an office, you would expect that your company would know you had a newborn and be sympathetic of the fact that your productivity is going to be down for 6 months or 12 months or 18 months.
Right.
Like,
well,
that's just how it is.
I would say this is part of being the self-employed bit of you have the additional burden of you have to be your own boss and you have to, you know, recognize that in yourself. Maybe we'll just do a slight tangent on self-employment.
Yeah, if you like, go.
Why not? I think it's just, you just have to, I have to build in all this additional time to think about what to work on, think about, you know, self-care. Like, I can't just assume I can just execute 40 hours a week. There is a huge component of, you know, both in my remote work, having those two big blocks of time where I can be productive, and then being self-employed, of allotting time to contemplation, which, well, at least
planning,
for me,
you know, it's
planning,
it's,
which I don't find that as, it doesn't feel as good as execution.
No, but planning always feels like wasted time. It's like design work, software design, you know, where you sit there drawing boxes and arrows on a piece of paper. Feels like a waste of time. But I tell you what, when you sit down to the hard work of coding, all that time comes back in you know, when in space, in, like with dividends.
Yeah.
It comes back with an express payment on it. It feels not as good. And it's not as rewarding to that dopamine receptor bit of your brain that, like, say, I've solved a problem, cookies.
Right.
Well, but it's part of the work, you know. There's the Mythical Man Month, I think. There's the, you know, quite an old book now. But yeah. I think it's in there. It could be one of those other old books. But, you know, they say that a programmer, even in a sort of old school enterprise environment, would only spend 10-15% of their time actually coding. The rest of it is meetings, planning. Yeah. You know, testing, debug, I don't know what, testing counts as coding to me, but who knows?
Coffee.
I don't know what,
yeah. Yeah,
coffee, water cooler.
Well, yeah, maybe just a pro tip. I've testing is always underdone, and I find testing a great procrastination tool. If I'm stuck on something, there's always more tests that can be added. And usually that's a little more low level or a little bit easier to do than, you know, an architecture kind of thing. So that's something I look to instead of Twitter. Like,
right,
maybe so I could add some tests somewhere.
You've got a little alert that pops up. Will, you've been writing tests for 2 hours now. Are you sure you're still adding value?
Yeah. Well, and again, this is this is the thing about remote work, or especially being self-employed. You just have to have all the discipline. Like, nobody sees the tests I write on stuff if it's a solo project, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No one's clapping me in the back, being like, "Good job on the test coverage." Right. It's, you can kind of punt that. So I've allocated it in the, just like good cleaning and health, right? Just like, yeah. I shave occasionally. Like, writing tests is important and valuable. And, you know, I do it for its own sake. Also, because I tell people to write tests.
Right. But okay, let's turn it into a testing episode. But like, the writing tests is how you can make changes later, right? So for me, when I come to untested code, it's like, but how can I change anything? And it might be because it's untested, likely it's highly coupled, and that's kind of why it's untested, because it's highly coupled and it's a vicious circle. But it's like, before I can start changing this, before I can start fixing this, I have to write these harnesses around it so that I can put some tests in place to know that when I make this cut over here, I didn't break it.
Right. Well, and I think, too, I've realized that I can, just as I have started projects and I find myself, you know, everything is CRUD with a list view and a detail view and, you know, some auth, you can reuse tests too. So it's not like, I will be doing at some point a deep dive on a Django testing course, because I always think of tests as really hard to write at first, because you don't really know where you're going. So it's hard to write tests for it. And then I don't know of great canonical guides for it, but then it becomes quite boring because you're just doing the same kind of tests, boom, 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 boom. So I sort of seek out the boredom. Like, if I'm getting bored writing tests, I'm like, okay, good. You know, like, this is kind of where I want it to be. And you can, you know, you can copy and paste broadly your tests in the same way you can do that with, you know, your URLs or whatever else, if it's a similar type of project to something you've worked on before.
But when there's boredom, there should be an abstraction, right? So I'm right. Hey, I've written this test before. Well, that means there's a.
Switch to PyTest. You know, you kind of
not true. Anyway, like, yes. kids at home. So you've got little ones. You've just got to look after because they eat, activity, sleep. But like, say they're older. Say they're like 10, 11, 12, you know, secondary school kind of thing. What do you call secondary school in the States?
Middle school, high school.
High school. They're a bit older. Anyway, but they can work. They can sit down with some work, and they can read. They can write for an hour. They can work on the computer for an hour. So they can actually sit in the same room as you, because they can do it in silence. And then it's like you're working together with your kids. And that's kind of really rewarding. That's like, oh, wow, you know, we can get some work done, and they can be in an environment where it makes them feel like empowered and big, and, you know, and you spend some time, and they're like, oh, I'm a bit, can you help here, Dad? Yeah, okay, 2 minutes, no problem. Like, that's kind of cool. So they're kind of taken care of. It's the middle ones that are trouble, like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. They are, you've got no chance. You've got
so my 4 and my 7-year-old is what you're saying.
Well, and you know, my 2 7-year-olds, right?
Yeah, and you have them too, yeah.
It's absolutely fatal because they basically they can't do any 30 seconds. Mom, Dad, I need some help. Okay, we're going okay, we'll spend 10 minutes getting you settled. You all settled, yeah? You're into oh, you look, I'll just sit down. Mom, Dad, I need some help.
So there is a light at the end of the tunnel, you're telling me, because I'm
yeah,
I'm
no,
not
when they get
it.
Older they can work and that's really nice. But these middle ones, they're just like you've got no chance. So essentially you just have to go with that as well. You have to be realistic about what you can achieve and you can't beat yourself. Look, they're off school because there's a pandemic and the schools are all being shut. And you just have to be realistic about what you're going to achieve in that circumstance. And don't try and don't get cross with them because they're kids. It's just age-appropriate behavior, right? And I want to do some work. Tough. You can't do any work. You've got...
Yeah.
You just...
Well, you know, parenting is...
Yeah, You can put the telly on for a bit, but you can do that how long? Like half an hour, like a day? Like you can't just put them in front of the telly and let them watch it all day. So you have no choice. If you've got kids of that middle age, that middle period, you are going to, the best you can do is potter at your work. So we talked about the creative work and the notebook and the downhill start. Try and make notes, right? Try and make notes. And so give yourself that downhill start, that to-do with the bullet points, that breakdown. So that let's say, they do get into something and that means you've got half an hour. Well, okay, that half an hour you can get on because you created that downhill start. But that's all you can do. You're like, these are strange times, you know. All over the world they're shutting schools and we just have to be realistic about what we can achieve in that time.
Well, that's helpful to hear about the age appropriate. I did have a minor victory yesterday and I'll just mention this. A quick aside. So with dad jokes and parenting things, I used to think that parents, you know,
my
didn't know that they were
Sorry,
wearing...
My kids tell dad jokes. They're like, hey, yeah, I've got a dad joke and it'll be atrocious. They'll be like, yeah,
but
I told you it was a dad joke.
Well, when I was a kid, I thought that parents didn't realize they were, you know, wearing terrible clothes or telling bad jokes or, you know, and now I realize they know, they just don't care. Right,
so they're too exhausted to care.
Why wear anything nice? It's just going to get stuff on it. You know, it's like, oh, you don't want to see pictures of my kid? I don't care. I'm going to show them to you. Like, that's my recent. I've totally lost the thought of what I was going to say. But
you had a moment with you talking about your middle.
Oh
ones,
yes. I was going to say my so the curriculum they're sending, teachers are sending links and. Yeah, teachers are just total heroes. And my first grader completed the second grade math assignment on her own, like a stallion. And I was like, yes, that's my girl. So, and then she needed help with everything else.
Yeah.
So it's a glimpse of maybe high school. But I think also kids, you know, kids model your behavior. So if they see you being disciplined and enjoying things, they'll pick up on that, you know. So, like already, you know, my 7-year-old has, we gave her an old phone that is in airplane mode and she's constantly wants to be on it. And we're like, no, don't look at that. But, you know, we're always on our phone too. So it's a good push to be better.
Yeah. To
adults,
not demonstrate the.
And not
the,
demonstrate the, you know,
iPhone
as I say
addiction.
And as I do.
Yeah, like, totally. Anyway, look, right. I just got one more thing on my notes here. It's basic rules. It says, get dressed, have breakfast. When you're working from home, get up in the morning, get dressed, have breakfast, make your bed, put the laundry on, do all the things that like make you into a normal human being, and then do some work. Don't just sit.
What is it? There's this poster. Is it like the oatmeal that shows like the chronology of? I'll find it and link the chronology of working from home. You just, it's self care and discipline, right? Like, you're just gonna.
But it's mental attitude as well. Like if you bother to get dressed, you know, if you bother to have breakfast, if you bother to take care of yourself, it means, yeah, I'm respecting myself and I'm respecting that I'm going to do some work now. Just because you're at home doesn't mean it's a holiday.
Yeah. Well, I'll put the link. It's called Why Working From Home is Awesome and Horrible. And part of that, I think, the motivator is I got to get stuff done, right? Like I don't have the luxury of not being productive, right? Whether you're working for someone else or you're working for yourself. You know, or you have a family, it's like, I can't F around here. So, so that stress and anxiety is quite productive.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, that's our special episode. We will continue to have episodes on Django related things. Thank you everyone for listening.
Join us next time. Bye-bye.